You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Shot blocked. Porzingis with his fourth projection. Courtney Lee for three. Beasley lines up. Ntilikina.
What he does is contagious. He comes in, touches.
And across the lane. Baker launches. Jack to Porzingis. Fires up the ball.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 99th percentile of explaining, complaining, and entertaining. I'm your host, James Basita, a.k.a. contested mid-range shots are my pet peeve, Mills. You may know me as the founder of NBA Injury Report on Twitter, and this is episode 289. On today's show, we're going to talk about the press conference that Scott Perry and Steve Mills held the other day to discuss the firing of Jeff Hornacek and, to a lesser extent, Kurt Rambis. They talk about why they fired Jeff. They talk about what they're looking for in a future coach. They talk about players on the Knicks like Kristaps and Frank. I'm going to share my thoughts with you on what they had to say. Spoiler alert, I love this press conference. You're going to find out why as you listen. We also just got news that the Knicks have scheduled their first interview with a head coaching candidate. That would be David Fizdale. I'm going to tell you why it's a good thing that they're bringing him in, even though he's not my favorite candidate. I'll tell you why. All right, let's start the show. Hit it, Marv.
Yes.
So Scott and Steve held a press conference the other day, and they talked about the current state of the Knicks. Top of the list was what they just did to their former head coach, Jeff Hornacek. Fired him. The first question in a situation like this is why? Why'd you fire him? So, one of the things that Steve Mills said really resonated with me when he explained why they fired him. And in order to, before we like get to that, it sits within this discussion of, I've been seeing this take around recently, which is, you know, well, who would have done a better job, you know, than Jeff Hornacek? What'd you expect out of Jeff Hornacek? They didn't have a good team with Kristaps. Then they lost Hardaway. Then they lost Kristaps for the season. You know, what did you expect? I even saw, it's kind of like a sub-argument of this, Zach Lowe, who I think is a tremendous writer and podcaster and understander of the game of basketball. He tweeted something along the lines of, you know, it's difficult to figure out, like, what kind of job that Jeff Hornacek and, you know, he threw in Frank Vogel here, have done because their situations were so bad, the teams were bad, and then when you throw in injuries, you know, it's hard to implement a system. And I just want to push back against this. I want to call BS on this. Wins and losses are, if you're paying attention, the last thing that you're looking at. You're looking at how the guy is coaching the game. It's not about wins and losses. If you have good players, like if Jeff Hornacek was coaching Golden State, he'd win a shitload of games. But he'd still be Jeff Hornacek, and maybe with Golden State it wouldn't matter because they're so generationally talented and they'd still win lots of, you know, championships. But with a lesser team, it's going to matter. And it's so much beyond just the one loss record. There are so many ways to evaluate a coach. I mean, you can look at rotations. You can look at lineups. They're, you know, kind of the same thing, right? Does the coach understand what's working and what isn't? Is he playing his best lineups? Like, that's one way you can look at things. You can look at the execution of set plays. Baseline out of bounds plays. Sidelines out of bounds plays. All plays when you're coming out of timeouts. Are they sloppy with those plays? Are they sharp? Because a bad basketball player may not hit the shot at the end of your well-executed play. But a professional player in the NBA should be able to run a set play with precision if they practice it enough with their teammates. The outcome may be in doubt, but how they execute certain things within that should not. They should all look like they're on the same page and know what they're doing. That's a way you can evaluate a coach. How do they make, how do they execute at the end of games in high pressure situations? Does the team look flustered? Again, that could be complicated to tease apart from how good the player is, but it's one thing that you can look at. You can look at in-game adjustments. both in the flow of things? You know, does the coach push the right button to stop runs? Or at least does he see something that's happening on the other team that can be addressed with a lineup change? And if he does he make that lineup change in a timely manner? If there's something that's fundamentally flawed with the lineup that he has in that's causing them to perform poorly, does he do something to correct it? You know, does the coach make adjustments at the end of quarters? Does he make adjustments at halftime? How does the team look in the third quarter? Is that better or worse than they look throughout the rest of the game? How about player effort? Are they trying hard? How about style of play? What system is in place? Is it an efficient system? Is it a system in line with modern ideas around basketball? How about, do you maximize your player's strengths? Do you minimize your player's weaknesses? In all these things that we've been talking about, do you progress over the season? Like, maybe some things start worse and get better. Or do they start one way and stay the same? Or do they start one way and get worse? You can also look at what the coach says to the press. This is another way you can evaluate him. So there are so many different ways to evaluate a coach that when someone says, like, well, what did you expect? They had a bad team. To me, you're either not paying attention, which I don't think is the case of, like, a Zach Lowe or other coaches. I think a lot of the times it's like you're trying to be nice, you know? But there are so many ways to evaluate a coach that go beyond wins and losses. I want to play a brief snippet of Mills saying basically the same things. I was like, yes, finally, thank you. Thank you for saying this, Steve. All right, here we go.
Well, we looked at, we evaluated so many aspects of our play in those 10-game increments. What kind of adjustments we made in games, what happened when we were down, what things that we did as a team. So we evaluated everything in addition to wins and losses, but this wasn't, we always said this was not going to be, the evaluation of how we looked at our progress over the year wasn't necessarily going to be based on wins and losses.
Right? So he said a lot of the things that we just talked about. I'm not going to go over all the ways that we overlapped, but you see what I'm saying. You feel me. Now, staying on the topic of why Hornacek was fired, later on, Mills mentioned specifically attention to detail and player accountability. And those are two things that we've talked about this year. Like, I think those do apply to Jeff. I think there was a general sloppiness in set plays and a lot of these slob and blob plays, sidelines out of bounds, baselines out of bounds, that a good, well-coached team would execute better, even if the end result wasn't necessarily a basket. But the Knicks just looked confused and discombobulated, and it went on far into the season. They screwed up a lot of late-game situations, looked discombobulated there. And then when you talk about accountability, you know, I don't know that this was like a problem all of the time and that was the world's worst problem, but I do think there was a different set of standards for some players sometimes. Like, different players would be able to play through mistakes. Chris Stapps, who is obviously the future of the franchise, I know you're walking a tightrope with him, you don't want to upset him, but he was allowed to do a lot more of the same dumb shit that would get Frank pulled after like 2 minutes never to re-enter the game, right? So perhaps Steve Mills and Scott Perry looked at, you know, those sort of things when evaluating Jeff Hornacek and not just the one loss record. Something that has cropped up online that I think is sort of interesting, because it didn't cross my mind at all, is this idea that they somehow did Jeff dirty by the way they fired him. I guess it was a little confusing the way they explained it, but it sounded like basically as soon as the plane landed back in New York, they took him into like a conference room at the airport or something like that. And I guess people have a problem with this, but I think that's a dumb take. I'm not trying to be mean about this, guys, if you're one of those people, but you just got to tell the guy ASAP. They knew they wanted to do it. That's the fairest thing to do. And even if that somehow upset Jeff, which I highly doubt it did, the manner in which he was fired, it's tough to figure out what someone wants in this kind of situation. You might think you're doing the right thing, but ultimately you're not. But it doesn't mean that you're being some sort of like cold-hearted monster. I have a situation from my own personal life, which I will share with you now, an anecdote, not related to basketball. I was in a long-distance relationship with my first girlfriend, and it wasn't working out. I was in New York, she was in Philadelphia in grad school. I knew I wanted to end the relationship. I knew I wanted to end the relationship, I don't know, about like a month or two before I did, but she was in school. I wanted to wait till she took finals. We had been seeing each other for many years. I don't want to say how many, but many years. So it was a big deal. I'm not trying to be like, oh my God, if I break up with you, your life's over. But we had been seeing each other for quite some time. It was a big deal. I knew before you know, this end date that I had to do it, but I wanted to wait till she finished up, just like Steve and Scott let Jeff finish the season. And then what I thought was the humane thing to do, she was scheduled, if you will. We had made plans for her to stay in my apartment in New York for about a week after she finished finals. But rather than have her come all the way from Philly to New York and then have me break up with her, I took a bus down to Philly, surprised her right after finals were done, said, you know, whatever I said, I'm going to keep that to myself. You guys don't get everything. I want to share most of myself with you, but, you know, I got to keep some things to myself. And I thought that was the right thing to do. Turns out she would have preferred to have been told when she got to my apartment. She's like, then I could have just gone to my friend's place, but everyone was gone in Philly, and I had to, like, sit there by myself for a couple days, and it sucked. But I did what I thought was right. You know what I'm saying? I have no reason to think that Steve or Scott, to bring it back to the Knicks and away from my brief therapy session, I have no reason to think that they did anything with malicious intent here. It would have been dumb. What'd you want them to do? Wait around for a week? You know? Like, did you want them to, like, get to Jeff's house before him and have rose petals from the front door leading into the house, up the stairs, to Jeff Hornacek's bed, and on the bed with rose petals you've spelled "you're fired"? And Scott Perry and Steve Mills are sitting there smoking cigars and drinking wine and are saying, now we'd like to have an exit interview with you. You know, what'd you expect of him? And they also said, you know, I don't think Jeff was totally surprised. So he had, you know, some inkling that this was coming. I think you could see that in his demeanor leading up to the news. And they got it over with. ASAP. Lickety-split. Pull the Band-Aid off your hairy arm. Cry about it for a second. And then it's done. I want to talk about what Steve Mills and Scott Perry said about what they want in a coach. But first, I need to talk to you guys about something a little bit more serious. If you or a loved one lived in, worked in, or visited Lower Manhattan in the months after the September 11th attacks, and have been diagnosed with cancer, federal benefits and health care may be available to you. Attorney Eddie Markowitz has helped many families recover substantial benefits from the September 11th Victims Compensation Fund. The James Zadroga Health and Compensation Act has been extended. That's what allows you to claim these benefits, but time is limited. Attorney Markowitz is proud to serve as counsel to the Zadroga family. Let him help you too. These benefits are not just for rescue workers, but for anyone who qualifies. The fund covers many cancers, including prostate, skin, lung, and breast cancer. Please call 1-800-LAW-HELP. That's 1-800-LAW-HELP to see if you qualify. All right, so Jeff's gone. We've addressed why. We've addressed the fact that they did not fire him in a mean way. Probably spent too much time on that. Now we go to the next question. All right, you don't like Jeff. What do you want in a head coach? And the press asked that question. And here is what Steve Mills had to say.
One of the things that, and talking to other NBA executives, and we talked a little bit about this, there's a certain amount of openness to today's NBA. It's sort of an intellectual curiosity. Bob Myers and I talked a lot about this in terms of what it takes to be a coach in the NBA, and guys who can absorb all of the things that are different about today's game, the use of analytics, the significance of the physical training and performance staff, how you incorporate player development into sort of a holistic approach as to how you coach a team. And I think we've had guys that have had bits and pieces of that. But ultimately, if you can find a guy that at least embraces it and understands what he doesn't know and how to have other people support him to bring other things in, I think those things are really important. And I hope we can find someone that again, understands where they need help and where there are other parts of the organization can help make them a more complete coach. And those things are important, I think, to success in today's NBA.
This was music to my ears. This was the perfect answer. He wants intellectual curiosity, yes. You don't want some blowhard who thinks he knows it all. He wants a guy or girl who can absorb all of the things different about today's game. Someone who's not stuck in the past, who's not trying to wage some fake unwinnable war for the soul of basketball. He mentioned analytics. He mentioned physical training and the performance staff and incorporating player development into a holistic approach to coaching the team. He said he wants a guy who embraces all of that. He wants a guy who knows what he doesn't know and allows other people to support him. And that, to me, was the crux of it. Knowing what you don't know is what makes someone smart. It's not being a fake guru who pretends that you know it all. The dumber you are, the more you think you have things figured out. You have to have, you know, strong convictions and believe in things. But you have to believe in things for reasons. You have to be willing to change your mind when new evidence comes up that doesn't support what you believed in. You know, you have to admit that a whole team of people can cover so much more ground than one person, you know, and can accomplish so many more things and have so much more focus in different areas because one guy can specialize in one thing, another guy can specialize in another thing. And a head coach is someone who takes all this information. A head coach is like someone who's good at using the internet. It's just a deluge. You turn on the faucet and it blows you back. There's so much garbage, but in that stream there's garbage and there's gold, and the ability to tell what's what is the kind of person who can, you know, critically think in a way that can help them form reasoned, sound, logical, correct, you know, but flexible positions on things. And so to hear Steve Mills talk about it in this way, I mean, that's perfect. That's perfect to me. That's exactly what they should be looking for. And I noticed he kind of is walking the walk that he's talking and squawking, because he said he was talking to other NBA GMs about like how to find a good coach. Maybe he saw that the last two coaching hires that he was involved in, although it's questionable how much he was involved in with the weird power structure at MSG. You know, how much was Phil? It's like, it's really tough to tease out how much he was involved. But regardless of if he was involved in like bad coaching decisions before or not, I like that he said he was talking to Warriors GM Bob Myers. I mean, have you guys heard of the Warriors? They're pretty good. You want to pick that guy's brain, I think. Like, yes, learn from the best, be humble, be open, be curious. He said he was talking to NBA executives, NFL executives, cast a wide net. You never know what you might learn. And I also like that they have emphasized in this press conference that they want someone who understands today's players. It's just another sign that enough of the bullshit, enough of the fake tough guy posturing. That's not really what Jeff was, but we don't need any of that Mark Jackson garbage. Again, we'll have an episode dedicated to why the Knicks should not pick Mark Jackson as head coach. But everything that Steve Mills and Scott Perry said about who they're looking for, I loved. I loved. So after they talked about, you know, why did you fire Jeff? What are you looking for in the next head coach? The press went on to, you know, are we still rebuilding? Is that what's going on here? And again, I loved what the Knicks had to say about it. Mills said, patience hasn't been one of our biggest attributes, right? And Perry was talking about how the Knicks want to build not just success, but sustainable success. If you trade for a really good old guy and then you have like one or two good years with him, is that the right thing to do, even if you have short-term success? It sounds to me like the Knicks are not going to make any dumb, splashy moves. And this is big. This is a massive change from our recent past. Phil kind of got us like halfway there by not trading draft picks away, you know? But Noah was one of the dumbest big-name splashy Knicks moves of all time, which is really saying something. And I also like that Mills shot down flatly the idea that New York fans, that's y'all, wherever you are from, sometimes I talk like I'm just talking to New Yorkers, but I do want to give a shout to everyone from around the world who listens to Locked On Knicks. What up? But Mills shot down the idea that fans of the Knicks, wherever they live, will not be patient for a rebuild. He said flat out when questioned on this, I don't believe that. He said they've been talking to fans. Perry said this too. And they say, be patient, stay the course. And that's right. We know that quick fixes are not the right thing. There are, you know, your Vinnies from Staten Island. No disrespect to Vinnies or people from Staten Island, you know, who still are like, we got to trade for Noah. Or I meant to say Rose, but what, you know what I'm saying. Those people exist. But by and large, very smart fan base. We will be patient for the rebuild that we know we need. It was music to my ears. Sweet, sweet music to hear Mills and Perry talk this way. When asked about the draft, you know, they basically were like, we're not going to give you names. And I would be furious if they talked about any names. That would be grossly negligent. And they are not grossly negligent so far that we've seen. So it was good to see they're like, dude, I'm not going to talk to you about the draft. But they did say, they used this phrase that we've heard a couple times, talent acquisition phase. That's the phase the Knicks are in, which means best player available is probably going to be the tack that they take. They mentioned, they're like, we do know that we may be short on certain positions, cough, cough, wing, you know, right now. But it sounds like that's not necessarily what's going to be the primary factor in who they draft. And again, that was something I love to hear. I agree with that decision. I agree with that approach. I want to talk about Stephen Scott's comments on a couple of the Knicks' big young players. I want to talk about David Fizdale being asked to interview for the Knicks' head coaching job and why that's good. But first, just want to remind you guys that you are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network in the entire universe, and multiverse. Stephen Scott were asked about Kristaps' contract situation. They would not comment on it. That is the correct call. Good for you guys. Moving on. They were asked about Kristaps in general, and they had some nice things to say about the young man. They said, we have a young all-star center, power forward, or whatever you want to describe him as. That's what Mills said. Yeah, Steve, tell him. You know he's a center. He did follow that up when actually friend of the podcast, Ian Begley, asked him specifically. Like, he had that kind of slip. He was just talking about the future of the Knicks. And he's like, well, I feel good. Like, we've got an all-star center, power forward, And then so a couple minutes later, Ian Begley was like, all right, do you think Kristaps should be playing center or what? And he specifically name-dropped, actually it was Perry. Perry specifically name-dropped positionless basketball. He was like, well, I don't want to say positionless basketball per se. So I'm glad that he's just aware of a modern concept, first of all. That's good. He's like, but it's important to find guys that have the ability to play multiple positions. He said that was key. He said the more of those guys you can have on your team, the better. Which is what we've said. Like, I think, you know, I do think Kristaps needs to play to fully unlock his potential. I think center is the best position for him in the long run. I do think there are other ways to throw a big with him where it will be okay and will be a good lineup. But we've said all along that just his ability to play a couple positions ultimately is good, right? Frank Ntilikina, same kind of person, could play multiple positions. You know, you got Tim Hardaway. It's one of these guys. So the more of those guys you can have on your team, the better. Sid Perry, I agree with that. I like where his head's at. They were asked about Frank, and they had good things to say about Frank. You know, they said he was the second youngest player in the NBA, and he feels he can go out there and defend any perimeter player in the league. So I don't think they want to get his head too swole just yet. They don't want to gas him up, like, all the way. You know what I mean? But they see young Frank. They mention him. It was Kristaps and Frank and, like, good Hardaway. They kept mentioning as their core. So that was very nice to hear. It seems like they think very highly of Frank, as do I. I want to talk about what they said about Kyle O'Quinn. They were asked if they wanted to bring Kyle O'Quinn back. And Perry didn't really understand the question at first. He, like, couldn't hear the person. He was like, yeah. I want to bring him back. He said it flat out, which I loved. He said he had a great year, which I agree with. And he said he represents a lot of what the Knicks are trying to be, which I agree with. So that was great to hear. And by, like, it kind of means if they want him back, to me, that's sort of a tacit admission that Cantor's not as much in the plans. I may be wishfully thinking there, but that's kind of how I read that. And when asked about Michael Beasley, rather than say, we want him back, he said, we will be in contact with Michael Beasley's camp, and we'll see where that takes us. I mean, Beasley, I like the guy. I'm not going to be furious if he comes back for a small role on low money. But to me, my cliff notes on him is, even though he is, in, you know, just tremendously talented scorer, there's enough going there on there over the course of the season between his defense and, you know, some of the turnover issues, that I don't think he does much to make your program a winning program, especially if you have to rely on him for any significant portion of the season. I like the guy. I think he's a hard worker. I think he brings some skills to the table, but I think he's that Bill Simmons classic, takes a little bit too much off in comparison to what he puts on, which is crazy given how, you know, just gifted he can look out there from time to time. But I don't know. You guys have seen it. Let me know what you think. But I think I've seen enough of the Michael Beasley experiment, even though I wouldn't be furious if he was brought back under the right circumstances. I want to close the show by talking about the latest news on the coaching search. David Fizdale is scheduled to be interviewed by Nick's brass. This is good. I mean, there are some red flags here. He's not my favorite candidate, I'll say. His relationship with Gasol, Marc Gasol, this past year was strange. He was fired basically for his relationship with Gasol. The Grizzlies chose Gasol over Fizdale. I'm going to look into this more, but my initial impression is it sounded like Gasol was having a rough time this year. He complained about the team tanking. He seemed ornery. But ultimately, you know, he is a player and an excellent one, even if on the downslope of his career. So management was probably like, we're going to keep Gasol, you know what I mean? But I don't know too much about that, so I'm not going to issue my definitive ruling on this episode. I need to look more into it. But it is a red flag, right? On the other side of that coin, some very high-profile players who typically hate the Knicks and their front office, like LeBron James and Dwayne Wade, have publicly endorsed David Fizdale. So if he has one strike against him from the Gasol thing, this would be in his favor in the player development, in the player relationship department, I should say. Maybe it's, you know, not too much to worry about if the best player in the league has got your back. Also in his favor, he helped modernize that team's offense. It was a very old school offense. He came in, got them shooting more threes, which I like. And he served as an assistant under Spoelstra for a couple of years, which I like. Spoelstra's a great coach. So I'm happy they're bringing him in. I don't think he's my top choice for reasons that I've already talked about, and I'll get into more detail as we, you know, cover coaching candidates over the next couple days. But it's a good thing that they're casting a wide net. He's obviously someone who they should talk to. This is another sign that business is running as it usually should at the Garden, which is like a normal team and not like a freak show. Another sign that the Garden is acting like a normal, rational franchise. And I can't talk about David Fizdale without bringing up the Take That for Data speech. This happened, I think it was last year in the playoffs. Context doesn't matter that much. I'm just going to play it for you because it's so beautiful. So I'm going to play it, then I'll come back and say goodbye, all right?
It was a very poorly officiated basketball game. Zach Randolph, the most rugged guy in the game, had 0 free throws, but somehow Kawhi Leonard had 19 free throws. Overall, 35 times we shot the ball in the paint. We had 15 free throws for the game. They shot 18 times in the paint and had 32 free throws. Kawhi shot more free throws than our whole team. Explain it to me. We don't get the respect that these guys deserve because Mike Conley doesn't go crazy. He has class, and he just plays the game. But I'm not going to let them treat us that way. You know, I know Pop's got pedigree, and I'm a young rookie, but they're not going to rook us. That's unacceptable. That was unprofessional. My guys dug in that game and earned the right to be in that game, and they did not even give us a chance. Take that for data.
Oh, it's a masterpiece. Like, as far as 21st century masterpieces, it's like There Will Be Blood, The Life of Pablo, the version that I have on my phone, not the one on Spotify, and that David Fizdale speech. Like, if I ever take an acting class, that's going to be my monologue. That's it. And I'm going to blow the doors off the place. You know what I'm saying? All right. Thank you guys so much for listening to this edition of Locked On Knicks. If you got a moment, rate us on iTunes. 5 stars only, please. Don't be a little, you know what I mean. You know what I'm saying? Subscribe to the show if you haven't already. Tell everyone about it if you haven't already. Tell the person handing out AM New York about it. You know what I mean? That's a real New Yorker. Tell them about it. If you're in Copenhagen listening to this, you know, tell, what do they do over there? I don't know. Tell your Copenhagenish neighbors about it. Right? I was gonna try to like make some sort of joke. I'm like, there's no way to talk about this without being weirdly xenophobic and racist. Anyway, follow us on Twitter at LockedOnKnicks or NBA Injury Report. Be chill to each other. Spay and neuter your pets. If it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it down. Save water. Always salt the pasta water, transitioning from one water to another. And tune in tomorrow for another episode of Locked On Knicks. Peace. Woo!